Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, August 24, 2016. I am Jason Powell. A little bit later than usual today, I am fighting off what I think are just some nasty case of allergies kicking in. I actually talked to my pharmacist this morning, and he said that there's something nasty going around that sounds exactly like you have. So that was I'll take the allergies over the dreaded cold. I have an easier time shaking the allergies. Feeling a little better today, but just wanted to wait until stop sneezing every 5 minutes before I did this. Enough whining, pissing and moaning, complaining about me. Before we get into the usual SmackDown audio review that I'll be doing here on the All Access side of things, couple of things. Number one, time is running out. This may even be the last time you hear me talk about the 50 cents for 1 month of .NET membership special we have going on right now. It is actually a $7 off special. Our normal monthly price is $7.50, and you can save $7 on that price or on our 6 month or annual option. So if you are a regular and you are looking to maybe go from monthly to 6 month or annual, a great time to do it. Jump on it while you can. It's not going to be around by this time next week, I assure you of that. And you will save $7. All you have to do is enter the coupon code SLAM16 when you visit ProWrestling.net and you look for the sign-up area on the main page. Very simple to find and a very simple process as well. And you can enjoy ad-free access to ProWrestling.net, hear all of our audio content. For instance, I did audio reviews of the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view on Friday, NXT on Saturday. Jake Barnett and I got together for SummerSlam, the audio review on Sunday night after the show. I did Monday Night Raw, and then was going to do last night. I was going to make this kind of a different type of show, but with the allergies kicking in, I held off. But members here, all of the major television shows reviewed in audio form. For instance, Zach Zimmerman will be reviewing both the NXT and Cruiserweight Classic shows. You may hear one of those shows tomorrow, but members will hear both of them. And then on Thursday, well, coming out of the show on Thursday, I will be reviewing the TNA Impact Wrestling show as well. Hayden Gleed and Darren Gutteridge get together and review the Ring of Honor television show. So all the major television pay-per-views covered. .NET Weekly will be on Friday this week. Jake Barnett and I will be getting together to run through all the news of the week, working on a couple of interesting things for that show as well. So stay tuned for, well, I guess members will just have to hear it on Friday. That show usually runs 60 to 90 minutes in length, just depending on the week and what's going on. And it is the flagship show, as we've called it for years, of ProWrestling.net. Plus, members here, bonus editions of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast that you hear sometimes here on the All Access side with Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett as well. Jump on this, folks. I can't tell you enough. Again, probably my last opportunity to tell you about it here on the audio side of things. 50 cents for 1 month of ProWrestling.net membership. SLAM16. All one word. You don't need to spell out the 16 part. Just a SLAM and the number 1 and the number 6 all combined together in the coupon code area. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet, or if you want to ask me any questions via email, hit me up at dotnetjason@gmail.com. dotnetjason@gmail.com. All right, and one more thing before we get into SmackDown, and no, it's not plugging anything. It is the Talking Smack show. Of course, this was more newsworthy than SmackDown last night, thanks to The Miz and Daniel Bryan. Okay, basic long story short here on what happened. You can read a great recap, including the word-for-word transcription that John Moore put together in his Talking Smack recap. It's available on the main page of ProWrestling.net right now. And, I was kind of half-watching Talking Smack while working on some other things, and boy, did this grab my attention in a hurry. It was the best promo Miz has ever cut. As someone who's for a long time now said, you know, they can do more with Miz. He just got to kind of shake this A-lister thing, this mid-card comedy stuff, and present himself like more of a serious wrestler and a serious champion. I'm not saying he's going to headline WrestleMania ever again, but you can do more with him. And I say it all the time. This is proof. You know, that. And granted, this was more work shoot style. I mean, there's already some question as to how much of this was just Miz kind of losing control and all of that. No matter what you think about that, and we'll get into it, but it just shows Miz is an excellent talker. He really does have tremendous mic skills. It's just he goes for comedy, and he plays the comedy role well, but there are times when it just kind of gets run into the ground, and Miz goes through these spurts where it's kind of he gets the go away heat. He's not there right now. He's doing a fine job as in the role this A-lister role. I just get a little bored with it, and I think that he could be more. I think he would be a fine Intercontinental Champion if he took himself a little more seriously, if he was presented in a more serious manner. And so I liked this. I liked that he showed that he has that fire, that it doesn't have to be all the Hollywood routine and the awesome stuff that he's done over the years. This was great. I liked the back and forth. It was basically, in a weird way, Miz defending his style compared to what I think he would say is kind of the more reckless style that Daniel Bryan uses, and I thought, or used, and I thought it was very interesting to hear Miz. You know, Daniel Bryan accused him of being a safe wrestler, and Miz talking about how he never misses shows, and basically defending the way he worked, and doing so passionately, and really tearing into Daniel Bryan, and saying that you promised everyone you're going to be back in the ring a year later, and you can't, you're not. And then Bryan saying, hey, if they'd let me, I would be. And Miz taking it one step further by saying, why don't you quit? Why don't you go work in those bingo halls? I mean, it was passionate. And so I don't know if these guys got together before the show and said, hey, let's generate some buzz. Let's try to get people watching this Talking Smack show. Daniel Bryan has spoken positively about the show in some media that he did. And so I think he's enjoying the format. And now, is it possible that Miz went a little far? Sure, yeah, it's possible. But I think it's just as possible, looking at this, that, well, they wanted to create some buzz. And they, what better way to do it than this? And they, when this was over, they went backstage and high-fived. Because, I mean, this was a great segment. This, when SmackDown finished, it was like, all right, this long stretch is over. That started a week ago Monday, if you watch all the major television shows. And really, it still continues with the Cruiserweight Classic and NXT tonight, which Zach Zimmerman will have live coverage of at ProWrestling.net, and tomorrow with TNA Impact Wrestling. But as far as, live shows and things like that, and just feeling like you have to see everything live, for me anyway, it kind of ended last night. And so it was like, well, SmackDown was fine. Got a good match with Ziggler and Styles, and I'll get into all that in a second here. But what a way to end this stretch with Miz and Daniel Bryan going back and forth on Talking Smack. I don't know where it's going. I haven't heard any buzz yet coming out of WWE about whether this was work, whether it was shoot, or how much of it was. I mean, I like that Talking Smack, the guys get to kind of be themselves. It's, it sometimes it's the last thing you want to do if you are a WWE fan who watches everything, is to watch it another half hour. It's coming off that, especially a pay-per-view week, a long one at that on Sunday, and then Raw on Monday, and then SmackDown on Tuesday. You may not be in the, you might, when SmackDown's over, you might be like, all right, I'm ready to tap out. That's enough. Talking Smack is entertaining. I like this show. I like it more than the pre-shows that they do, certainly. The pre-shows can be a little newsworthy, but this gives the wrestlers a chance to go out there, put things in their own words for the most part. I'm sure there's some scripting that takes place, but the Usos showing good personality, which shouldn't surprise anyone, because, quite frankly, every time they're put in a format like this, they show good personality. It's just they don't get to do it on WWE television, the main shows, Raw or SmackDown. We don't get to see their personality. We've seen it on Total Divas. They're good guys. They're engaging. They're entertaining. So I really like Talking Smack, even if before now, it really hasn't felt truly newsworthy. This is what made it truly newsworthy, and that's why I'm just kind of like, yeah, I think that, I'm not going to sit here and say I know definitively that this wasn't kind of a planned thing or something. They know each other well and feel comfortable having this debate. Maybe they've had it behind the scenes, something like that. For all I know, Daniel Bryan is livid. I just don't know, but I really enjoyed the hell out of it, and I think Miz made really good points in defending his style of work. And if you notice, he even stopped short of saying, hey, what about that new Universal Champion that is out injured right now? I mean, he easily could have pointed to that. Not that I blame Finn Balor for, he took the buckle bomb into the guardrail. I have a hard time saying buckle bomb when it doesn't involve a buckle. But you know what I'm saying, the power bomb into the barricade type of thing. I guess not even a guardrail, the barricade that WWE uses. So, I mean, he could have pointed something like that out too, but he didn't. And really just great debate in a weird way. I mean, Daniel Bryan, I think, could have fired back with more had he wanted to, but Miz shined. Miz was great. If you haven't seen this, go out of your way to catch this. I really thought it was. I like what people have had to say about it. It's always fun to kind of get different reactions to this. Yeah, I mean, hey, whether you come away going, this is a work, this was a shoot, you're talking about it a little bit, you're thinking about it, and that's cool. And I think that's what's going on here is they want to generate some buzz for this show. Whether it's WWE cares enough to do it, or Daniel Bryan really likes the format and wants to get people buzzing a little bit, I'm not sure. But I look forward to finding out more details about this, but I thought it was great. And again, John Moore's recap of that segment available on the main page right now at prowrestling.net. Speaking of .net, I'm going to be reading through, using Jake Barnett's live coverage from last night as an outline for SmackDown. Jake did join the show a little bit late. He was having some technical issues. I can tell you that the opening had AJ Styles backstage in a locker room gloating to, it was weird. It was this weird combination. I just wrote about it in the hit list, so I'll pull that up to kind of get this list of guys that they had back there. This wasn't like a babyface locker room. This wasn't a heel locker room. This was just a bunch of guys hanging out backstage. And I know some of you are going to defend this going, well, just because they're, you know, they don't always have to be enemies just because one's a babyface and one's a heel. And some are even going to take it a step further, and we need to blur the lines. I saw a comment like that in the forum that they can't wait till we get away from the traditional babyface and heel. I'm sorry. We've tried that, and Vince Russo's a big believer in that, and I'm just not. I think that that's the formula. That's what's worked in pro wrestling for many, 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 many years. There's no proof that it doesn't work. I haven't seen any proof that blurring the lines in pro wrestling is something that really is going to be beneficial. So that's just me. But the backstage scene, you had it was just kind of a group of wrestlers talking, which is odd enough. Like, well, why is the camera showing this before AJ Styles got there? But it was Baron Corbin, Eric Rowan, Apollo Crews, Rhino, and a seated Dolph Ziggler, who was just bummed out, apparently, that he lost his championship match. So, yeah, it was just this weird mix of baby faces and heels kind of mingling together. Was it Memphis that had separate entrances? One of the groups had separate entrances back in the day. I'm sure more than one, but I'm trying to think of the one that I remember watching fairly consistently that had, they'd come from opposite sides. And I really liked that. I mean, that's the way I feel like it should be done. Things, Jake kind of picked up with the introduction of the new tag titles and women's championship. They're blue, and you know what? I don't mind them. I'm like, okay, if it's anything like that red Universal Championship, I'm probably not going to like this. And I think it's the tag titles that are very blue. There's some, I don't know, maybe I'm just partial to blue, but I didn't come away feeling like, oh, screw these titles nearly as much as I didn't really feel like screw the Universal titles. Just like, yeah, this looks like it was designed for Kane by Eva Marie is what I've been saying. And I'm not a fan of it, but maybe it's because I had my guard up expecting something like this, but it was fine. And then you add in that you have Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon being the ones who are presenting the title. They're very likable. People get behind Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. And so I can see, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that the fans just didn't completely turn on those title belts. They're addressing a bunch of the tag teams, or maybe even all the tag teams, I don't remember, and then the women's division as well. And so what we're going to get is a six-pack challenge at the pay-per-view to determine the first women's championship on the SmackDown side, and then we got a tournament that started on this show for the tag titles. No bracket shown yet. I'm not a fan of that, but I guess they wanted to tell their story with Heath Slater trying to find a partner, because he did end up coming out. He came out first, and he didn't make a big fuss over not getting his contract, even though he won by DQ last week. If you recall, Shane was giving him the contract, and then when a woozy Heath Slater, who was the idea was that he was basically concussed, he said that Shane, he basically referred to Shane as Stephanie and talked about how beautiful he looked, and that was enough for Shane to take the contract away. Like, he earned it. He won. It's a binding oral agreement or verbal agreement. Shouldn't somebody like, all right, it's WWE. They're going to do what they want. But from there, though, we ended up with, well, they told him if he could find a tag team partner, they would let him in the tournament. But he has to win the overall tournament to get a contract. We're getting closer to the point where fans are, I mean, there are already a lot of Slater supporters. If this were happening on Raw, I think it would be better. If Stephanie McMahon was the one preventing him from getting a contract, I think they still kind of look at Heath as the bumbling heel. And I think the fans are starting to see this guy in a different way. They want to cheer him. And I think there's not all fans are, but I think if you gave a lot of the fans who are kind of quiet right now some incentive, I really think they would. And it's kind of tough because I think they want him to be a SmackDown guy. They seem to do more with him on the show, and I'm guessing that's where he ends up. But it's unfortunate because you have Shane and Daniel Bryan, the two likable authority figures on that brand, and so it doesn't work as well when they keep making him jump through hoops as it would on Raw. I wish they'd just have him jump through a bunch of hoops for Stephanie, keep getting denied no matter what he does, get the fans behind him, and then let Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon step in and be the good guys and offer him a deal. AJ Styles came out. He and Dolph Ziggler ended up going at it a little bit. They had to be separated. I got a kick out of all those outlaw wrestlers being told by Shane to break it up. Let's go. And them actually doing it. First match was Becky Lynch beating Alexa Bliss. You know, not much to this. She won by disarmor. I guess just kind of a women's showcase. I thought they might do a little more to protect Alexa Bliss since she's new. And you know, just, if nothing else, heading into the six-pack challenge just to kind of keep her strong going into it so it doesn't feel like it's mostly about Becky Lynch and Nikki Bella. From there we went, and I may be forgetting one other person, but backstage we had Heath Slater running into Miz. He wanted Miz to be his partner, and it sounded like Miz was all for it, and then we found out that he was actually talking to Mr. Spielberg about being the new Indiana Jones. So Slater was left. He still doesn't have a partner. After commercial break, we got the Ascension in the ring. What better way to kick off the tag team tournament than with the Ascension? It was the Usos beating the Ascension to advance. And, it's the Usos beating the Ascension. You tuned into SmackDown and a Superstars match broke out, basically. And, hey, I'm happy the Usos are going to be featured more prominently on SmackDown. And hopefully as heels. I'd really like to see that. I mean, I don't think they want American Alpha to be heels. But if they... I guess I just want to see one of these teams, and I think it's going to be the Usos. I think it would be kind of it would freshen them up, where I think, you know, Alpha, they were introduced as baby faces. Let's keep them that way. Let's see if the fans get behind them. I think the Usos, if they just stay baby face, I don't have any faith in WWE to do more with them from a character development standpoint. Then it was time for AJ Styles to come out, and Mauro Ranallo was putting over a SummerSlam match, and he asked for a microphone, and he basically was, you know, boasting about his new Never Give Up armband. He said it looked better on him than John Cena anyway, and we ended up getting... We ended up with Dolph Ziggler coming out and being stopped by referees. Daniel Bryan walked out and ended up making a match between them. AJ had already been named the number one contender. The gimmick or the stipulation that Daniel Bryan added to this was that if Dolph won the match, then it would become a triple threat. And I'm like, oh God, we already have a six-pack challenge on this show. We have a four-way on Monday's Raw to determine the new Universal Championship. And I'm not really into Dolph Ziggler right now. So just lose, Ziggler. That was my immediate thought. They hyped Nikki Bella for coming out of the break. And we actually had Carmella making her entrance. And then Nikki Bella. Nikki started to give an interview in the ring with Renee Young and talking about a return. Carmella attacks her from behind. And viciously. And ended up kind of leaving Nikki lying and then talking trash from the ramp, as Jake wrote. And I like this because, okay, yes, if you think about Sunday, it's like, wait, the babyface attacked the heel and left her lying? This was essentially a double turn. And I say that because Nikki on Sunday was the heel she took a heel slot in her match, and it wasn't like she was a reluctant participant. She was hugging the other heels. So I don't know if that was just let's get through this match and we'll worry about it on Tuesday, or if they changed their minds on this. I'm not sold on Nikki Bell as a babyface. I'm not. there's a whininess to her that hasn't worked when they've kind of positioned her that way before. She still goes out there and does the pole dance, and it was part of her entrance, that kind of thing, whatever that, however you want to refer to that. So there's parts of her that if she makes a few tweaks, I think she can be fine. Carmella, though, needed something. That whole, I've been venting about it since they called her up. I was disappointed they brought that whole glow-like entrance of hers where she goes out there and talks about being the queen of Staten Island. It just felt like a skit that she was doing, and the moonwalk. And I like Carmel. I think there's something there, but that act wasn't clicking. She can do that act now as a heel. You know, I mean, it was so bad. But as a heel, there might be a little something to it. I mean, she can heal it up a little bit more, obviously, when she's introducing herself. But yeah, as a babyface, it was a no-go. And I'm not saying I want them to keep that part of her routine around, but I think she's going to be a better heel. And I thought she got off to a really good start. She showed some good intensity there. We had Randy Orton coming out. He just was, they showed still shots and of him being left a bloody mess by Brock Lesnar. And Randy got a really good reaction. And he talked about how the crowd, you know, probably didn't expect to see him there. And it was one hell of a fight with Lesnar. And he wasn't happy that Shane stepped in and even made some reference to, you know, probably won't be the last time him and Brock Lesnar cross paths. Not indicating like a rematch is coming soon. Just kind of saying, you know, this isn't over. I can't wait to get you back in the ring. It was just kind of leaving the door open for something down the road is the way I took this. Bray Wyatt ended up coming out. He sat in a rocking chair and, you know, he just said, a man who hurts, a man who suffers, a man who dies. And he laughed and said that he wasn't just a man, he was a god, and a god can never die. He told Orton, don't worry, but he would find out all about it in time. And then the lights went out, and when they came back up, Bray Wyatt was gone out of the rocking chair. So I don't mind Randy Orton appearing in the show. I've heard, you know, definitely heard the opinion that he should have been out selling. You know, Brock Lesnar beat the hell out of me. I was left in that pool of blood. This guy should not have been on this show. Okay, but Brock Lesnar is an MMA fighter. And I think there was a... Number one, we see MMA fighters after their fights. You know, even unless they're sent to the hospital or something, and it's 2 days later. You know, it's like they have lives. They're going to have to get out and about. So unless they're hospitalized, God forbid, you're going to see a shot of them or something like that. And for Orton to be there, I mean, they could have said, you know, he's not here. It would have been okay, I guess, but I kind of liked that he was there. I think it was good for Randy to be there. And I don't think it takes away from what Lesnar did. That image of Lesnar or Orton lying next to a pool of his own blood. Orton standing there on SmackDown with those staples in his head. I don't think anyone's going, oh, well, I thought Brock was a badass, but here's Randy Orton on SmackDown. I guess not. I just don't think it worked that way in this case. There are times where I feel like, yeah, keep a guy off television to sell something. In this case, it was a cut to the head. You know, and you can say, well, maybe he was concussed too. I feel like the imagery was enough. I don't think anyone is looking at Brock's attack on Randy in a different light today and thinking that it was soft now. I really don't. Oh, and by the way, I've got to sneak this in. I did joke on Twitter last night when Bray Wyatt came out and interrupted Randy Orton that Chris Jericho was at the gorilla position checking to see if Bray was supposed to do that. Ba-dump bump. Backstage, Shane McMahon was asked about Brock Lesnar, and we found out that, I guess this has been on the website somewhere, Stephanie McMahon fined Brock Lesnar. Remember, she was upset about what Brock did at the pay-per-view and going too far and putting his hands on Shane and all of that. The fine? $500. God, I love it. That's perfect. Because it was one of the things, I didn't like her promo on Raw. I'm like, why is she bothered? She doesn't like her brother. You know, they don't get along. I don't like this at all. That's perfect. $500. As somebody put it on Twitter last night, Brock craps $500. And if that's the case, I will personally be, you know, I want to be in the Brock Lesnar outhouse business. Nobody else can use it, but if he's crapping $500, I'll definitely be in charge of that outhouse. Nothing else better come out of there, just the $500. But anyhow, that's the idea. And I had people like getting pissed on Twitter. I think people were thinking Brock needed to be punished because he opened up Randy Orton. And folks, that was the finish. And did he mean to cut him open as much as he did? I don't think so. But I don't. There's nothing that Brock needed to be punished for as far as what happened on Sunday, because that was the finish. So what this was Stephanie McMahon punishing Brock Lesnar for what he did to her brother, and doing so in this light way. I mentioned this on Twitter last night too. The next step with Stephanie, I would have announced during SmackDown. Okay, in addition to fining Brock Lesnar $500, Stephanie McMahon has also announced that she is giving a match of the night bonus for the Raw side, and it's $500 reward to Brock Lesnar. So she's basically paying even that piddly fine that she gave him. There was some hype for the next tag title match, or the next tag tournament match, and then they went to a commercial. When they came back, Heath Slater asked Arn Anderson to be his partner. Arn rejected, because... well, Arn's older now. He didn't really get into all that. And my first thought was, God, I hope Daniel Tosh is watching, because now he knows where Arn Anderson is and he can get to him. But Rhino ended up walking up after Anderson left, and he wants to be his Slater's partner. So Heath has himself a partner. It's Rhino, and apparently they'll team together next week in this tag team tournament. I think they said 8 teams if they were in there. I guess it was going to be 7 teams if they weren't, which begs the question of, okay, if you had American Alpha and you had the Usos on this show, who is going to get the bye? I mean, seriously, who would you give a bye to, of the remaining tag teams? If there's, wow, now you can, well, they're going to have a triple threat. Well, okay, you're still, I don't know, there's a way you could do it, but clearly it's scripted. So they knew they were going to have 8 tag teams. Part of me is just like, I hope Rhino turns on Slater, and Rhino now, for some reason, is an ass and is trying to prevent Slater from getting a gig. They could have some fun with them as a tag team, but they got to be careful with this. I think they need to get rid of these guys quickly. I think it needs to be, whether it's Rhino turning on Slater or just somebody beating Slater clean, they need to get them out of there, because I don't think, unless you use them to kind of help tell the story of the Usos turn. The thing, you don't want them in there with like American Alpha, and you want American Alpha to be over, and then people start to get behind Slater, and they're disappointed when he loses. So unless you're going to go all the way with them, which I wouldn't advise, I guess we could see how it was done, but it doesn't jump off the page of me. I would get them out of there quickly. But the fourth match was American Alpha defeating Breezango. God, I hate that name. Tyler Breeze and Fandango. I still hate the Fandango name. Let's get to Tyler Breeze and Johnny Curtis, please. And they did show at some point, maybe it was before this match. I don't think Jake has it listed, or I probably just breezed right by it, no pun intended. But they showed... they had a promo, like a backstage thing with them sitting around, and actually the word breeze was used, and they to explain they're going to breeze by somebody, and Fandango figured out that, hey, that's your name. They're doing Zoolander material. Not that this was like directly from it, but I mean, that's what Tyler Breeze is in a lot of ways, and they're kind of being as dumb as the characters in Zoolander, the two male models played by Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller. I like the original Zoolander. The movie was made how many years ago? Zoolander 2 was a frickin' bomb. I saw it in the theater. Don't ask. Guilty pleasure. But I was one of the few. If I thought, like, well, it's still funny, this can work, fine. I see these two as being a real tag team for WWE. If they can get away from all of the silliness, all the quirkiness of this team, and just... treat them like, wow, these guys are a really good tag team. And not, well, they might be different, but they're still a good tag. How about they're just a really good effing tag team? They're really good at what they do. There's not this quirkiness to them. If you need to bring in a manager, do it. Give them a valet. Do it. Whatever. Just something to make these guys a good team, because there's only so long that Alpha and the Usos are going to be able to feud against one another. Don't damage these guys now. All right, they lost here. They're out of the tournament. They were beaten by American Alpha. That's fine. But keep going down this comedy path with them. It's time to start rebuild. Not even rebuilding them, just featuring them in a different light. Think of how the fans reacted when they had that really good match with the Usos on the kickoff show. People, they have a good look to them. People will treat them as a good heel tag team if they're just simply positioned that way. We saw Dean Ambrose interviewed backstage. He was talking about the number one contenders match. He'd been gambling. He wore a giant cowboy hat, like a foam cowboy hat. He was so wacky. And he ended up having a drink girl bring him, I think he mentioned it was like a soft drink. And like Jake thought he was like drinking on the job, and people were kind of bitching in the comment section. To each his own. It's an easy mistake to make, number one, and try doing live coverage and keep it up on everything. You can miss little things like that, I assure you. But I came away thinking he, I think he talked about drinking energy drinks or something too. But either way, he was goofing off on, the SmackDown show's on, and some people they're gonna like the wacky part of Dean Ambrose. I don't. I think that I mean he's out there in a big giant cowboy hat. He's act he I think it was Godzilla and a bear. He said he had no idea who the number one contenders match involved, and something like it was a bear and something, a grizzly bear and something. I don't remember what it was. And then when he was told it was Amber, or it was Styles and Ziggler, he's like, "Well, that makes a lot more sense." So he's trying to be cute, he's trying to be clever, and there's some people that like that. I just think it's one of the things that makes me look at him as just being a second-rate champion. I hate to say it, but I do. I mean, it's fine. I mean, he's basically, I look at the WWE Championship now like I used to look at the World Heavyweight Championship. It's the second, it's the inferior title. Even though we've only had one Universal Championship match, the champion from that match got hurt, and the belt is atrocious. I still look at that as being more valuable than the SmackDown title that has all the lineage. Dean Ambrose is part of that. The fact that he faced Dolph Ziggler is part of that. And it's one of the reasons I think we need to get that title off of Dean Ambrose soon. I think AJ Styles is the direction to go in. But I can't say that I'm thrilled about the way that they positioned AJ on this show either, with him just being extremely braggadocious, almost in a really over-the-top way. I want to see AJ Styles the star. And he's kind of a pest heel. He's like a really, really good Miz as far as like in the ring, but he's just the way he's gloating and things like that. I'm not saying he needs to present himself in this straightforward fashion. Just turn it down a notch and find the right vibe for AJ Styles. And I don't think they had it on SmackDown yet, but I do think he's the guy. And I'm hoping that at the pay-per-view or shortly thereafter, he becomes the guy. I really think he's the guy to put that title on. And that will help me look at the WWE Championship as being a prestigious title again. I think Dean, as I've said many times, when he turns heel, all bets are off. I think the guy's going to be great. We've seen he has that in him. If you've been watching long enough to refer to John Moxley days, you saw some of it with the Shield. When he gets dark, oh man, look out. I think he's going to be great. And then I may not see him as being a second-rate champion if he ever gets another run as a heel with it, but I do now. I mean, he's out there and the t-shirt doesn't help, and he's popular, but he's kind of a not the most popular guy in the company. Ideally, you want somebody to be way more over than Dean Ambrose, but he's like a nice distant two or three. He's okay as the secondary champion, but that's what he is. Let's not lie. He's kind of the secondary champion of the two major championships, and one of them doesn't even have a guy holding the title right now. Anyhow, the last match, the main event of the show, was AJ Styles defeating Dolph Ziggler in what was a very good match. AJ ended up winning with the Styles Clash. They had Dean Ambrose on commentary. After it was over, Styles walked over, knocked the headset off of Dean Ambrose, and they kind of were jawing back and forth as the show went off the air. So some good hype there. I like that Dolph Ziggler didn't win. Again, I didn't want to see a triple threat. Again, I'm not into Dolph Ziggler. I mean, they're trying to rebuild him, and I applaud the effort. It's going to take some time. It may take a heel turn for him. It's just, there's this quirkiness to Dolph Ziggler. I wrote about it today in the hit list, and just to kind of give you, just to summarize, some of this, we like to blame creative. Some of this is Dolph Ziggler. I mean, I'm all for a guy, the whole notion that the best characters are guys who take their real personas and just amp them up, an amplified version of them true selves. And Ziggler, it might be an exception because he's into some things that I just don't think really click with the crowd. I mean, think of his tributes to 80s hair metal bands. Remember when he came out with that wild hair that time, and I don't even remember which band he was paying tribute to, but he's done things like this for a while, and I don't know if in his mind it's like, well, I'm just at the point of no return anyway. I might as well have some fun. But he does things like that, and it's just, I don't think he carries himself in a world championship way. I mean, back when it was a different look, and so, I mean, it's subjective. For me, when he would wear the suits with the tennis shoes, I was like, oh, It just didn't work for me. But I was also ready to admit that, all right, it doesn't work for me. Doesn't mean it's not going to work for everybody else. Maybe I'm off on this one. But just some of the gear he's worn, so just that affinity for 80s hard rock slash heavy metal, if you will. And that's coming from a guy who likes late 80s hard rock and heavy metal. I do. But I don't need to see Dolph Ziggler making that what his character is about. I don't know why his character would be so into these things. I really don't. I don't know why he felt the need to wear what he did on Sunday. It was like, are you making a political statement with your gear or what? I mean, the guys at my house just said we were focused. Like, what does that say in the small print? It was like no one, and then it finally figured out it was like no one rides for free. And it took a long time because the bottom half of that print was so small. And then once we figured that out, we're kind of sitting around going, why would he put no one rides for free on his ass? See, like Fred Garvin, male prostitute son. It was just like this, as I wrote about in the hit list, he's like a walking Spinal Tap moment. It's strange. Every time he takes a step forward, he does something quirky that makes me look at him in a way where it's like, oh, you took 2 steps back. I'm really hoping that they're starting to show, all right, frustration's building for Dolph. You saw him sitting in that chair just fuming prior to when AJ showed up in the first match of the show, or the first segment of the show. And then you go, he loses now to AJ. He lost this to Dean Ambrose. So what is it going to take for him? Maybe he snaps, maybe he turns, and maybe that's when we get to see a new and improved Dolph Ziggler. But hopefully it's without some of the quirkiness. I really want Dolph Ziggler to climb out of this because, yeah, I mean, I think he's responsible for some of the situation that he's in, but he is a talented guy and creative didn't do right by him for a long time. So I really hope that this works out for him, but I hope he realizes it's not just them. It's look in the mirror, kind of self-assess a little bit, and hopefully he can find his way out of this and be a meaningful player in the SmackDown brand. Lord knows they need it. This was another show where I think they're making good use of the limited talent roster that they have. We didn't get any type of Baron Corbin Kalisto type of action on this particular show that I recall. But so there's a couple of guys that they could be doing something with, or could have done something with on this show. But they have done a little bit with them in the past. Those backstage segments where Baron Corbin's basically bullying the hell out of Kalisto, and I'm sure they'll be picking that up again. But it's not so much I worry about now because I've enjoyed, other than the premiere, the first show after the draft, I've enjoyed SmackDown a lot. I would say more than Raw. Just the way they use their talent that they have, but it's light on star power. And now John Cena not there, not a big question. The big question of, all right, what did it mean for John Cena to put down the Never Give Up wristband? And he's not even on SmackDown. Like, huh? That's weird. So you kind of expect, well, they might have Randy Orton sit out, but of course John Cena's going to be there. And no, he wasn't. So strange move there. I'm not sure what Cena had going. He was at Raw the night before in Brooklyn doing the dark match. So I don't know why they had him sit out, but maybe it'll make sense later as when he does return. But I felt like they kind of missed the boat in not playing that up a little bit more. Overall, yeah, a good show, kind of a limited roster. I'd like to see them get another notable name or two. I don't think Curt Hawkins is going to do it. I don't think they have plans for Curt Hawkins, but boy, I'd love to see a Samoa Joe or a Shinsuke Nakamura. Just somebody, and it doesn't even have, if they're hell-bent on having those guys in NXT, give me Bobby Roode. Bring up someone who has a little bit of name value with some of the crowd and the potential to get over with the entire crowd. Somebody that can step in, and if you position them right, even if it's someone who's watching isn't familiar with them, can become a star that night. And that's what I think they need more. If they had one or two guys like that for that upper mix, cool. That's what SmackDown is missing, but it's still an entertaining 2-hour show, and the MVP continues to be the lack of the third hour. By the way, major props for that set. I really like that set. SmackDown looked just first rate. It didn't look like, all right, it's got the same set as Raw. There was none of that. It was like, wow, SmackDown, look at you. So yeah, very cool that it had that going for it. And I was happy to see that they're really trying to differentiate between the two. I was skeptical at first, but that was a big step in the right direction. But that will do it for me today, everybody. Thank you for listening. I'm not sure if you guys are going to get the Pretentious Show tomorrow. Or you may get Zach Zimmerman tomorrow. I guess I'll sort that out here. But check back tomorrow for the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Take a moment to Also, subscribe to this daily podcast. It's appreciated when you do that. Anything you can do to help spread the word about this podcast and ProWrestling.net is appreciated. And thanks again to everybody who took the time to listen or call into those live shows. Those were a lot of fun. I'm sure we'll be doing more of those in the near future. Until next time, take care.